This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, hello everyone. Should we get started?
Good morning. Yes.
Yeah, good morning. Good evening. Welcome. Thanks for being on the call. Is there anyone that's on the phone that isn't in the Adobe Connect that wants to introduce themselves? And staff, is there anybody that's in the observation Adobe Connect? I guess not. And does anybody have a updated statement of interest? All right. Silence is golden in this case. So let's get the meeting started. We've got a update from Jordan on the competition and choice subteam. Jordan, are you ready to take it away?
Let's hope. You guys hear me?
Yep.
All right. No technical problems today. This is Jordan Buchanan for the record. So the competition and consumer choice subteam continues to focus its work on market definitions with the intent of being prepared to have sort of nail down some working definitions of markets for the purpose of the rest of our work by the time we get to our, by the time we wrap up our face-to-face meeting next month. So we spent some time on the last call talking about two topics. Number one was just taking another look at data sources. We've got doing quite a bit of discussion on the list and elsewhere about possible data sources that we might use. A number of folks on the team, I think led by Stan, are quite enamored of the MTLD stats data source, but we decided that while that's quite a handy thing to use, it may not be quite as accurate as some of the data that ICANN has available. But fortunately, we can use the MTLD stats data initially in our exploration and then perhaps go back to ICANN and substantiate some of our hypotheses by looking at the canonical data from ICANN. There's a few exceptions to that, like PARC data, where ICANN may not have the information, and MTLD stats may be the best we can use, but we've also identified a number of other data sources as well. So we spent some time talking about that, but then spent the second half of our last call and a little bit of email time since then talking about possible ways that we might look at definitions of what the market place for TLDs is, and ultimately decided to start to investigate four different ways of thinking about markets. The first of these is one that analysis group already proposed in their initial report last year, which was to basically segment by topic area. And so the theory here is that if you buy, let's say, a .photography domain, you might also be willing to buy .dot .photos domain or a .photo domain, or maybe even a there's another one that is eluding me off the top of my head, but you know, there's a bunch of TLDs that are all in the same space, and you might reasonably decide that the market consists, or a market for the purpose of evaluating whether competition has occurred, is to look at this set of TLDs and see how they interact with one another. And there's other examples. I think the analysis group, one that we've been using online in our discussion, is there's an educational segment. So you might have .school, .academy. There's a legacy TLD, .edu. Those might also be considered in a market with, for example, .ac, .uk. So that's one way of thinking about it. There's a set of sort of topically related TLDs that might be considered to form a market. The second big area that we are taking a look at is sort of geography. Like, you might consider people in a certain place might consider a set of TLDs as substitutes for one another. So the example I gave online yesterday was maybe you live in Osaka. And so you might think .osaka would be something you might register in, or you might register in .jp as a ccTLD, or there's an IDN version of .jp you might register in, or there's a Japanese TLD .mina, which means everyone. So those TLDs might be the set of things that you would consider registering if you lived in Osaka. Similarly, obviously, people are aware there's other TLDs like you know, .Berlin, and people in Berlin might think that .de would be part of that set of alternatives, et cetera. And so there would be really to focus on sort of if you place, what are the set of TLDs that might address your market. I believe, as I understand things, this analysis is actually also being included, or some form of it, in analysis groups V2 study that we expect to see later this year as well. So there will be some supplement of additional data from analysis group to support this sort of analysis as well. The third way of segmenting the market is that we were contemplating is by language. And so here you might have a number. You might say, oh, someone speaks German. What are the set of TLDs that a German speaker might consider as alternatives to one another that can pose a market for them? And I can't list all the A, my German's not very good, and B, there's quite a bit more of them than is in these other examples. But I know there's like German TLD equivalents of words like travel and insurance, and then once again, .Berlin might be one of the things that these people would consider, et cetera. And so you might have a language-based sort of set of domains that you would consider as composing the market. And then finally, we thought it would make sense to look at, maybe it makes sense to segment by looking at, not necessarily by TLDs, but like when the registration is made, maybe looking at new registrations versus existing registrations might be an interesting way to think about the definition of a market. So that, those are the four big areas that we've decided to take a look at, and then we've subdivided into even smaller sub teams. Carlos asked on the chat, does language include IDNs? And absolutely, Carlos. Obviously, you might look, there are many, for example, Chinese IDNs, and those would all be included in the set that you would consider if you were considering a Chinese language. Interestingly, often there's ASCII equivalents as well. For example, in Chinese in particular, there's a number of pinyin TLDs. And sometimes, in some cases, they represent the same word as the IDN equivalent, they're just represented in the ASCII transliteration instead. So it would certainly be interesting to take a look at. In any case, as I was mentioning, we have subdivided into sub-sub-sub-teams, three of them looking at topic, language, and geography, and I'm hoping that each of the sub-teams will come back at our next call with some proposed sets of TLDs to look at based on these segmentations, and we'll decide whether we can get some sort of working, whether we think that there's a particular set of TLDs that would be interesting to look at, sort of working hypotheses for market definitions, or at least have some lively conversation around them on our next call. And the last thing that's been going on, not necessarily just within our group, but obviously on the bigger list, is there's been some discussion about definition of monopolies, which Stan kicked off, which folks have probably seen online, and whether it's reasonable to consider TLDs as being natural monopolies or not. This is an area where obviously we expect to learn more about what the actual competitive dynamics look like, and probably have more consideration of what's going on in the marketplace once we've been able to dig into the data a little bit more. I think that's my brief summary of what we've been up to. I know that Jonathan wanted to make these updates be a little bit more focused on content as opposed to process. I'm hoping the market definition discussion is helpful, but also certainly want to encourage if folks from the Safeguards and Consumer Trust team have thoughts on the market definitions or segmentation exercise, happy to hear those either now or online.
Thanks, Jordan. Callie, I see you have your hand up. Go ahead.
I don't know. Do you hear me? Am I heard?
Yes, we
can. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if this is the right time to speak, say something, but also, by the way, thanks, Jordan, about your summary of the last 2 weeks. And also from our task of categorizing the TLDs, GTLDs, and so forth, well, I thought of something that I am somewhat puzzled. Well, thinking from an end user, a registrant point of view, say a plumber. Okay, this plumber might have many attributes. One is what he does. He is a plumber. Okay. Another is his city. And another thing is, any entity would have many attributes. So, however, as we have more and more GTLDs as well as CGTLD and so forth, it seems like this plumber needs to register many times according to every single attribute of this single entity. That I don't know. I'm still thinking about whether that is from our internet address system, because that is linear. However, the relation between different registrants seems to be a multi-dimensional matrix. So whether that is a problem, and do we truly want every single entrant to register many times? If that becomes necessary, then seems like our system needs some kind of improvement, because I believe it's not ICANN's intention to get every single registrant to register many times and spend money many times. So that is one thing that I thought of and sort of puzzled. Thank you. Bye. Not bye, but thank you.
Thanks, Collie, for your question. We should definitely take that conversation up. There's a question about whether that's a new phenomenon necessarily, because people, if they wanted to get that level of specificity about attributes, were already doing it at the second level domain. If somebody has a professional site for their day job and then a separate little site for their photography, then they might already different domains, even if they're both in .com. And sometimes people have multiple domains that are at the third level, like a Flickr or a Facebook, in order to accommodate that. But people already have multiple presences on the web. Lorene, go ahead.
This was just a question to Jordan. I just wanted to make sure I followed what you were saying, Jordan. So basically, on your first topic, four ways of thinking about markets. The first subdivision was things that are topically related, like your photos, photography, pics, example. The second was geographically. Was the third language? That's the one that I think I missed. And then the fourth was when registrations are made, a sort of chronological focus.
Yeah, that's right, Lorene. The language was the third area, and the fourth is roughly, are we looking at the market of new registrations versus renewals? And this somewhat gets into some of the conversation that's been had online about switching costs and so on. So it may be that you look at it differently when you're first registering a name versus when you're thinking about names that you already have.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to make sure that I got the big picture. Thanks, Jordan.
No problem. And I had actually raised my hand to briefly respond to Kylie as well. It is an interesting question, which is, I think, roughly covered by one of the big topics that the competition and consumer choice team wants to take a look at, which is roughly, are the benefits of increased consumer choice and competition, do they exceed the potential costs of, for example, defensive registrations? I think the classic example that's given is not so much like the plumber, because obviously I think Jonathan's right, like you might have someone who's a plumber who also really likes to take pictures in his spare time, and so he might get a dot plumbing, also a dot photography, but those would probably represent two different opportunities for him to register a domain name, and he might have done that on his own previously in .com. He probably doesn't want to have his plumbing site and his photography site on the same domain name in any case. But I think the question is more, are there companies or individuals that feel forced to register in additional domains that they don't really need for some reason? And that would be more like what the defensive registration looks like, and the cost of those defensive registrations exceed the benefits of competition and consumer choice. Obviously, first of all, we need to better understand both what the scale of those defensive registrations look like and what the benefits of competition and consumer choice look like before we really can attempt to answer that.
Thanks, Jordan. I have a couple of questions for you as well. I raised them in email, but I guess I'll raise them for the group as well. And one is that in the categorization exercise that you're doing in the subteam, is it all starting from the list of existing TLDs, or is there a notion of starting from a list of languages or a list of geographic regions and seeing if, in fact, there's been expanded coverage? I don't know if that question makes sense, but if you start from inside your list, may miss that a continent got left out or something like that.
So I think that's a fair observation. Once again, that, Jonathan, that goes to a question that we also, one of our later questions that we want to answer as a subteam, which is have the benefits of competition and consumer choice, are they spread equally, or are they realized by consistently across different communities? Are there some communities that are realizing the benefits more than others, et cetera? So I think for that later question, we definitely want to get to this notion of are there areas that, or you know, either language groups or geographical areas or some other forms of community that aren't being served by the set of TLDs. And it's quite obvious that some languages or some types of communities, even if you just look at the, you know, maybe the types of professions represented, they're probably not consistently represented by the set of TLDs. There is a dot plumbing, but, you know, maybe there's not a dot construction worker, although I guess there's dot build or something like that. But, you know, there may be different types of, you know, there's not dot masonry, I don't think. So, is the community of, stone workers, not being addressed? So we will want to eventually take a look and see how the TLDs are distributed across potential groups and if there's some being missed out. For the purpose of our current exercise, we're trying to get workable definitions of market for the purpose of understanding the competitive dynamics. And I think for those purposes, it's probably most useful to focus on the TLDs that actually exist, because it's hard to say, oh yeah, how's competition working, you know, in for the Thai speaking community, but there's no Thai TLDs, for example. So those people would obviously be people that speak Thai, if there were no Thai TLDs, I'm not sure whether that's true or not, they would be forced to, you know, either not use domains or use ASCII domains, but it'd be, I think, much harder to create like a working market definition based on languages that aren't represented than ones that are. So I think at least for the purposes of this exercise of market definition, it's probably most useful to focus on the TLDs that already exist. But, you know, welcome input from Stan or someone else who has given some thought to it, or now maybe being put on the spot to give some thought to it. And I see Jamie's raised his hand as well.
Go ahead, Jamie. I'll ask my question after you come in.
Sure. Thanks. So I just came into some of the competition discussions recently, but one thing that occurred to me was that a constraint on any competitive behavior can often be potential competition. And so there may be, for example, just making this up, there's a, you know, dot travel, and you could look at dot travel as a single market with no substitutes, again, suspending disbelief for a second. And you can imagine, if that were true, you can imagine a scenario where dot travel is able to leverage its market power in anti-competitive ways. But part of the policy of the new GTLD program was to have multiple rounds, sorry to use that word, I don't know, multiple launches. And so I was wondering whether there's consideration of the impact of potential competition emanating from a, you know, future launches that may constrain a TLD's ability to act anti-competitively.
Hi, Jamie, it's Jordan again. I think we're at the phase still of looking at what's going on with the recent introduction of TLDs. I think we might learn things that would help inform, for example, the subsequent procedures PDP that's going on right now that might inform additional release or delegation of TLDs. But, you know, what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me, actually. It might be that if we look and we see, you know, maybe on this language topic again, we say, aha, the you know, a particular language community, there's only one TLD for that language community, and look, it has a lot of registrations and charges really high prices, whereas if we look at Chinese, there's a bunch of, or English, there's a bunch of different TLDs that would address that market, and look, there's, you know, still a bunch of registrations, but they're spread around the different TLDs, and they also, prices are lower, and they might say, oh, look, that shows that when you actually, as you say, something that would push back against anti-competitive effects would be to actually have multiple options for consumers. I think we're at the phase right now, we still need to sort of get those definitions of markets and sort of see if there's some that are more competitive than others, or maybe just have more options than others, and what the effect on competition would be. But I guess I would use your suggestion to sort of urge the sub teams to make sure that as they go through this sort of segmentation exercise, they find some places where there's fewer options addressing a particular community than others, and that might help us decide whether the number of options available really have an effect on prices and consumer benefits.
Thanks, that makes sense.
Thanks, Jordan. And I, one other question I asked in email, and again, I don't want to drag down your update, but does it make sense to have another cohort that's economic in nature? I ask that simply because there's a lot of interest in this group for gaining an understanding about whether or not the new GTLD program has addressed the needs of the quote-unquote developing world or the global south, et cetera. There's all sorts of different descriptions for that, and should we be trying to look at the developing world as a market or something like that? Is there something versus, I'm thinking of first, second, and third world, but that's sort of Cold War terminology, but is there some other terminology we could use to come up with an additional cohort that captured that notion of the global south or the developing world?
So I guess you could try that if you believe that there's a set of TLDs that you could identify that are intended to target, that are sort of operate as the set of alternatives that you might register if you lived in one region versus the other. My guess is that there's not enough in common amongst, for example, people in the developing world wouldn't look and see consistently, people in both India and, Botswana, to name places where we have participants from, they wouldn't look and say, aha, because we both come from these developing nations, that we would want to register in similar TLDs. And so I think for the purpose of the market definition exercise, unless we think that there's a way to define the market in such a way that we could look and say that there's some consistency in the way that, that people, by virtue of living in these parts of the world, would approach the market differently, it'll be hard to come up with the segmentation exercise. It may be that we can get it up a little bit more narrowly by making sure some of our geographic segmentation includes different, we might want to make sure, like, one of our segments might want to be Europe. That might be a totally legitimate segment, and that would obviously be mostly developed countries. Then you might do a segment and say Africa, because there is like the .dot Africa TLD, obviously. And then you might also look at individual CCTLDs and so on. You might look at the difference between those two markets that happen to have mostly represent developed countries and mostly represent developing countries, and see if there's a difference in behavior or opportunities. But I think for the market definition purposes, it's hard for me at least to imagine how you would define a market for study purposes that distinguishes between those two groups. But I do think it's an important area that we understand, and once again, this gets back to whether the benefits of the program are being spread around equally. I'm just not sure we'll be able to get at through the market definition exercise per se. We may have to get to it later in some of our other analysis, but happy to hear other. I see, I don't know if Jamie's hand is the new hand, but Carlos has certainly raised his hand as well.
Sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. I'll call on Carlos in a second. Megan mentioned in the chat that it might be covered by geography and language, and I think in a way it is. It might just be a kind of a cross-section through them, right? In other words, if you combine Africa and Latin America or something like that to then create that additional cohort, it might end up being a superset of some of the subsets that we're creating. But Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. This is Carlos for the record. And after I raised my hand, Jordan already mentioned an approach that might bring some light. I have already discussed it in the email with Stan, and it is the fact that we might want to look at some individual very active CCTLDs and see how they behave with the introduction of the new GTLDs, and if they got competition by some new GTLDs, like if we take a big one, the biggest one in Latin America is, of course, Brazil, is a very active CCTLD. They got also a little bit of competition by .Rio, maybe only regionally, but I think it's worthwhile thinking a little bit deeper, maybe some case studies, because it's going to be very difficult to do something for the whole global south. But it's worthwhile to keep a track, thinking, okay, let's look at not small countries, but some bigger countries in the south, what has happened in terms of competition. I don't know if it would apply to India to compare ASCII with the new IDNs or something like that. I think it would be very interesting to keep an eye on at least one or two case studies or so that we can compare later with the results of the efforts that ICANN is doing on the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carlos. Okay, so and thanks, Jordan, for that update and everyone for that conversation. Next on the agenda is a confirmation of a list of topics and data requests. I don't know how we wanted to go about doing that. Is that something to just show on the screen and then let people raise an issue, or did you have a sense of that, Jordan, that you wanted to how you wanted to address that topic? Has that been circulated to everyone?
Yes, we have a separate, probably makes the most sense to you in the context of the sub-team, but we do have a couple of working documents that are intended to identify data areas. We also, I will mention on the last call, we also got updates from analysis group and ICANN staff on the analysis group and Nielsen studies, and identified some areas where we're still struggling to find data. But I think we have pretty good working documents within the sub-team, which I'm happy to continue to circulate to the broader group as well. But so far, we haven't identified a large number of areas where we need additional data from either staff or outside groups. I think the big areas that we continue to be concerned about are how we get data on CCTLD registrations and secondary markets information.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. I guess the staff have developed a little bit of a work plan for the competition and consumer choice team. Alice, do you want to bring that up quickly and sort of see what form that takes? Again, I don't think right now on the call is the time to go through this in detail, but this is the beginnings of some milestones that are for a work plan for competition and choice sub-team. So if everybody wants to take a couple of seconds to look at this, and if you have any immediate questions, but otherwise we'll circulate it.
Yeah, Jonathan, what I'll suggest is we circulate this to the team, and then on our next sub-team call, we should work through it and make sure we're happy with it.
That makes sense. Anybody have any questions about how this looks generally? So we'll circulate this document to everyone to look at, and give a sanity check to the competition and a choice sub-team, and then on their next call, they'll go through and go through it over in detail. Oh, thanks, Alice. I guess they've already been circulated. So read your email, people. All right, Carlos, I think that's an old hand. So what I'm going to do is hand the microphone over to Laureen for an update from the Safeguards and Trust team.
Thanks, Jonathan. So we had a productive call last week. In fact, it was so productive we didn't manage to get through all the things we wanted to get through, but that's okay. We first of all had some very good presentations. Francisco Arias was kind enough to join us and educate us a bit about what name collisions are, how high an incidence there have been of name collisions, and the headline there is that there don't seem to be that many. I think there were, according to my notes, 32, and those were within a smaller number of GTLDs, 14, and involved no harm to human life. I assume there were other less significant harms. And Francisco also talked about the procedures that were in place to protect against name collisions, including SSL certificates, name collision reports, and controlled interruption. So that was very helpful. And then Drew kindly started his presentation on the paper that the Secure Domains Foundation, which Drew is affiliated with, had put out on domain name abuse, particularly the report on the business case for proactive approach to domain name abuse. Unfortunately, we ran out of time, so Drew couldn't complete his presentation. And we hardly had any time for Carlos to dive in, so we're going to be taking those up again on our next call. Certainly the headline from Drew's presentation was that there was a business case for proactive domain name abuse, and we're going to look forward to hearing more about the details there. We started off our discussion with a couple of asks. One was a chart that lists domains in sensitive or regulated industries. That's something that the GAC had provided advice on several occasions. This is one area where the GAC's advice was not embraced by the board, and it remains a topic of concern. And Carlos had asked for the chart that actually categorizes the domains into that category, and one exists, and our staff has located and I believe circulated that chart. I also asked for a slightly expanded literature review just to make sure we are capturing potential data sources or sources of articles which point us to data sources on the issue of new GTLDs and consumer protection, consumer safety. Jamie had raised some scoping concerns, as did staff, that one, perhaps that's not specific enough, and two, we don't want to blur the lines of our mandate, and I think that we're all mindful of keeping within the scope of what we've been asked to do, and I personally am very mindful of not sending staff off on a wild, time-consuming goose chase, so I think I've managed through discussions with Aliza to come up with a way forward on that's reasonable. But I think the main takeaway from the many perspectives of that discussion were that we do want to start from a neutral point of view that we don't want to suppose that the new DTLDs have either promoted consumer trust or eroded consumer trust, you know, that we want to keep an open mind and really look at the data and let that really inform many of our views and conclusions. So I think that was a productive discussion. I also want to let you know that I've been approached by Ron Andruff, who was very interested, and Ron is a former member of the board and the business constituency. He has a very keen interest on the public interest commitments and how they've been implemented and what sort of impact they've had. And Ron was kind enough to pass on a lot of background communications that the business constituency and the ALAC have generated on this issue, and also expressed interest in becoming an observer to the group, and Alice has kindly provided information on how he can do that. So I wanted to give people a heads up about that. And that is basically where we are right now. We have a reading list that may expand a little bit. We have divided and conquered these readings in that folks have been assigned to take a very close look at them and then report back to the group, although I'm encouraging everyone to read everything because they're all good. And I think once we have our brains around that, we will be able to take a deeper dive into our list of subtopics and think about how we may want to approach dividing and conquering those items. So that's basically where we are now.
Thanks, Maureen. On the back of name collisions, you said the headline was that there weren't many, but I guess the other headline from the standpoint of your most recent comment about consumer trust is that it does appear from the data that there could have been, absent the safeguards that were put in place around name collisions, there could have been more, and that it appears as though there was a real issue, and this, particularly with some of the TLDs, that it made sense to prevent their delegation, and that some of the measures that were put in place, a little bit like Y2K, helped there to not be a lot of issues after the fact.
That's an excellent point. Thank you for adding that.
Does anybody have any questions for Maureen? Okay, and then Lorene, how are your topics and data requests coming? Does it look like you're going to be? I know you're going through a reading list now, and that's part of the exercise to determine if you have an update, I suppose. But do you have any comment on things you're looking to try and get produced, or anything that we need to be on top of sooner rather than later?
At this point, we don't have a specific ask, other than the ask that was discussed way back when in Marrakesh or Los Angeles, I can't remember when now, but there were additional consumer trust questions we had talked about, first adding to the Nielsen survey and then concluding that it would be better to do that as interviews later on in the process. So I mentioned that because I don't want it to get lost in things we discussed long ago and no longer remember. So I see that is still on the list. And we anticipate making data requests from ICANN compliance folks because we know that's a big source of data that's out there that we're hoping to focus on. But other than that, right now, we don't have data requests I anticipate we will, however, have data requests in the future as we are able to delve into these into our reading list more and more.
Thanks, Lorene. And I guess the question for staff is, I guess the interviews are something that are going to happen as a result of the survey question results, and that will help to identify potential interview candidates, et cetera, and then compliance. Is there protocols or timing that we need to be aware of there? Is there a time by which we should be making requests or anything like that, or just a question of keeping it on the list? And I guess mute your phone if you're not talking. It sounds like somebody's moving around quite a bit with their phone.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Aliza. I don't think that there's a I don't think there's any sort of deadline. I think you just need to keep us aware of who you want to, how you want to structure this, and who you want to speak to. We don't have a particular timeline in mind.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Aliza.
Other than to follow the work plans we're hoping to establish for the subteams and so forth.
Right, so I guess that's a good segue. If you want to bring up the safeguards and trust work plan, I don't know, Florine, there's anything you want to share about this or important milestones you want to highlight?
I'm going to take the same approach for Jordan. The working group itself really hasn't had a chance to digest this, so I'd prefer to let us have that as something we're going to talk about next week and then get back to the group.
Okay. So thank you, Lorene. If there aren't any additional questions for Lorene, then I'm going to pass the talking stick to Aliza to bring us up to date on the studies and surveys.
Sure. I'm happy to do that. So the first one I'll speak to is the Nielsen Consumer Survey. I'm happy to report that they have now finished fielding and have gotten reached all of their requisite quotas for adults and teens. So they are now working on analyzing the data and coming up with a report for you to review at your June meeting. As I think I'd mentioned before, we're anticipating David Dickinson from Nielsen to come and speak to you when you are all in D.C. at the beginning of June. So that that piece of the Nielsen work is on its way to being complete. On the registrant questionnaire, yesterday I sent a draft of the questionnaire to the Nielsen subteam list, which we had created earlier on when we were looking at the draft of the consumer list. I'm aiming to have a conversation with Nielsen next week, and we would like to have a call with those of you who are on the Nielsen team list, and of course anyone else who isn't and would like to join. You could just let us know perhaps in the chat, and we'd be happy to add you so that we can speak to David about the changes that were made in the registrant questionnaire and hear any comments or suggestions you have for changes in this questionnaire. So the goal there is to speak to him and hopefully get through any changes and get to a final survey within the next couple of weeks so that they can begin fielding. I think our initial plan was to field in June. Hopefully we can still stick with that plan. So I think that's all on the Nielsen end. On the economic studies side of things with analysis group, analysis group is continuing to receive data from registries. They haven't received it from all of the registries in the sample yet, but we're working with our own registry services engagement team to reach out to those registries that haven't replied and encourage them to participate. To that end, myself and Karen and two representatives from analysis group will be on the registry stakeholder group call later today. It's actually in about 2 hours from now. To kind of do a last-ditch sell of the study, talk about how the data will be stored and address any concerns about data security in that setting. On the registrar side of things, there's been very little response with very little data to the request for retail pricing data from registrars. And at the suggestion of a few registrars, after a conversation we had with Jonathan last week, I actually spoke to analysis group, and they've pared back their request to a shorter window of time in the hope that a smaller ask might result in more responses. So analysis group has sent out the revised request to the registrars in the sample, I believe, yesterday. And on our end, our team is reaching out personally, calling registrars from our engagement managers at ICANN and asking them to participate. We're also going to probably send out a new note to the registrar stakeholder group list and work on a few more outreach efforts there. But in the meantime, analysis group has begun actually manually scraping retail pricing data from registrars' websites just in anticipation of not getting enough from the registrars themselves. I think that's all. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Anyone have any questions for Lisa?
Lorraine, go ahead.
Lorraine, go ahead.
Do we have a sense of what the concern is other than perhaps competitive concerns?
From the registrars, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't clear. From the registrars, that why are we getting such a faint response?
Sure. Competitive concerns is definitely one of them. Obviously, this is pretty sensitive pricing data for them. The other big one is the size of the ask. As I understand it, some of these may be small registrars, and they just don't have the staff to pull together the quantity of data that analysis group is requesting. But I think those two things combined might give them pause. And, finally, there's no requirement that they participate in the study, so it's kind of a hard sell to get them engaged in that end.
Stan, go ahead.
Elisa, is the main problem with the registrars the price data?
They're either not responding at all or responding that they don't care to share their data. That's right.
But how about the quantity data?
They're unwilling to provide anything, frankly.
Well, the reason I raise it, I happen to have in front of me something from ntldstats.com. It's a 20-page report. It lists every registrar. You can match every registrar to registries, and it tells how many domains there are for each registrar in each registry.
Right. ICANN has that information.
That's the quantity data, we have that, correct?
Yes, that comes in our monthly transaction reports, and I think what NTLD stats is capturing it from zone files, but we have that as well in our monthly transaction reports.
Okay, so just to be sure, I understand price data are sensitive, quantity data are available.
Correct.
Good.
Elisa, this is Lorraine again. Just brainstorming a little bit on this. Is it that they don't trust the confidentiality will be maintained in terms of the competitive concerns?
I think that might be part of it. We haven't heard very many specifics other than to say that the data itself is sensitive. In the few instances where we've heard back, the registrar, as I said, we don't plan to participate, or this is too sensitive for us and we don't plan to, they haven't really gotten into a whole lot of specifics. We've tried to make the case that ICANN doesn't have the access to this data. This is all going to analysis group who are, well experienced in handling secure and sensitive information. All of the data will be destroyed after the study is complete. Everything will be aggregated and anonymized before it's actually published. But it's just been a really hard sell.
I'm just wondering if there's any more pinpointed discussions that could be had with, I'll say, influencers in this in the registrar community to perhaps get a better perspective on how their concerns could be met. You know, if it's just an unwillingness because there's a concern about maybe the data will reveal something they're uncomfortable with, well, that's not something we would be able to address. But if it's a concern about confidentiality or if it's a concern about burdensomeness, it seems to me, as you've already done, regarding burdensomeness, those are things we can address. So I'm just raising the issue that if perhaps we had a more pinpointed understanding of what those concerns were, we could make more inroads into addressing them and maybe pull loose some more data.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and we are attempting to do that. You know, part of the trouble is, like, for example, we'd like to speak to the registrar stakeholder group, and I, you know, we're working on that and speaking to others who are influential in that group. It's a very big group. They're, you know, not quite as organized as the registries are in the sense that their meetings aren't quite as regular, they're not quite as active, so a little bit harder to get the message out to a wider range of that community, but we are working on that, and Jonathan's actually had some good ideas on reaching out to registrars, so we've been working with him on that. There may be some registrars who might be willing to voluntarily provide their data, and so part of the paring down of the request was in response to that, so we're hoping we might elicit more of a response from them. But, you know, I agree with you. Obviously, we all want to see more data that will only make the report stronger and put you all in a better position to offer some analysis. But it's been an uphill battle.
I think, Lorene, we shouldn't underestimate the burdensome part of this because that's, in fact, something that we have the least ability to help them with, right? I mean, without them opening their databases to outside consultants or something like that, just the mere fact that it's a bunch of work for them and they don't necessarily see an upside is probably the biggest issue, and that most of these other issues are, comparatively speaking, red herrings. I mean, I think it's just a big ask to get this data, and, you know, the upside feels academic to them. I don't know if there's any more brainstorming we could do about how the outcome of this study or the accuracy of this would be to the benefit of registrars, and maybe we haven't done enough work to sell this in that respect and try to speak to their own self-interest in the success of the program. Because right now it's just us asking them a favor that they don't have to grant, and that's a lot of work for them. And I actually think that's the biggest issue that we're facing.
So I'm wondering then if any, I'm wondering if since we have funds for data gathering, you know, maybe there should be given some thought to subsidizing this in some way. If this is really important, and I ask that as an if, not as a given, but if it's really important, is it important enough to devote some resources to?
Yeah, thanks, Lorene. And I've kind of trotted that idea out, and it's raised some eyebrows. I guess we haven't really figured out how to operationalize that, if that's a word, that suggestion. But I can again try to. I don't know if it's something appropriate for Aliza to mention on the call. You know, some outside help in getting some of the data, because it really is my perception that it's more that it's just a lot of work and not a lot of upside. And I agree with you, Carlos, that they shouldn't be able to just stay out of it. But the truth is, they aren't compelled contractually to participate. So I mean, it's a you have to appeal to their civic duty. And that can be tough if you're especially small and operating on a shoestring and being asked to go and find a bunch of data. So I don't know, Elise, if you have an idea on how we could use money as a way to somehow help them through, you know, hiring a data person. I mean, I that may just raise more security concerns than it answers.
Well, yeah,
I don't know.
I think, you know, we've also given it a lot of thought of different ways of getting at this type of data and helping to answer the questions we want to answer with retail pricing data. You know, the costliest way of, not the costliest way, but I mean, what analysis group is doing is literally going on registrars' websites and searching for different strings and copying over the prices. I mean, that's a pretty costly way of doing it, and we've built that to the price of our contract with them, so they're doing that. But in terms of actually working with the registrars to pay for it, you know, you're talking about a few dozen and everyone's different systems and, convincing them of the security of doing some of this type of research. So it might be a bigger task to be imagined.
Have an amazing day.
I think someone needs to go on mute.
See you later.
So that's kind of where we are. I haven't come up with any more brilliant ideas.
David, did you want to put some meat on the bones of the suggestion about getting data from the register consistency itself?
Yeah, sure. No, it was just an idea because we seem to be struggling with the idea of getting data from the registrars themselves, and I just wonder whether the registrar constituency might have some of that data because it's the sort of thing that they may have already covered in some discussion. It may be limited to a certain number of the active registrars who are willing to give it, but then it's still data nevertheless, and if we can refer to it as coming from the registrar constituency, maybe it's stuff we can use. That was really all I was thinking.
Thank you, David. I mean, I think it's worth trying.
Sorry, yeah, we all, everybody shares this frustration, so it's just a question of trying to figure out the best way to work with them and make it into a win-win. I don't know, getting back to Carlos's statement, it could be that, again, we haven't found the right buttons to press to make them feel like this is in their interest and that it's worth expending their time and resources to comply with these requests. And yes, moral pressure, Carlos. Yes, I feel like we've been exerting some of that. Part of the problem is we're keeping secret the list. It's sort of a randomly selected list for data purposes, and so we can't, you know, apply pressure on any particular one or anything like that. But anyways, we'll keep thinking about it. In the meantime, in parallel, analysis group will be doing its manual collection of data, even though that results in significantly less significant a data sample. Any other questions or comments? And before I move on, I don't see Karen Lentz on the call, so this may be moot, but there was an email back when we were talking about safeguards and trust and PIC specs, there was the notion of a data, like a study plan to look at that particular issue. Is that, I don't know how that got resolved. Is that something that, Karen, you want to speak to here, or did you want to speak to it in the sub-team and then wait to roll it up? I just didn't want to bypass it if it was something we wanted to get discussed.
Sure, Jonathan, this is Karen. I'm in the car. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So yes, I sent a note to Lorene yesterday in the context of the sub-team work plan on safeguards and trust, just noting that we did have this recommended metric that asked us to look at question 18 of the application, which was the mission and purpose for the TLD. And the metric was actually asking for a qualitative analysis of what applicants wrote versus some look at their performance and their operations at a later date. And in looking at, you know, how we might approach that, we also took a look at the GAC early warnings and where they existed, some of the voluntary public interest commitments that applicants made. So there were, you know, the large picks that apply to everybody, but there were also these voluntary sort of registry-specific that we thought we could take into account in looking at how things may have changed from what applicants wrote in their applications originally. So my note was just to sort of recall that that metric existed, and as you know, the sub team and the group do delve into picks, that's one aspect to recall. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. And I guess it might, as you suggested, I think it may have an effect on where it falls in the topic list from a timing standpoint, if we're going to try to do some outside study on it. Lorene, go ahead.
Now, I wanted to thank Karen for that because it relates directly to one of the topics we've already considered as a thing to delve into, and certainly also coincides with Ron's recent call as well. So I think that's an important topic, and I want to raise it. I want to raise it for the sub team. But the notion of what was in the application versus what's the reality, and I would add another layer of when I say reality, I mean what has ended up being in the actual pick in the contract. The other layer I would add is, you know, is there actual, are they actually adhering to the picks that they have in the contracts? So I think there's three different layers of inquiry here, and I think that'll be an important topic for us.
Great, Lorene, thank you. Again, I didn't know if you guys wanted to bring up with this call or not, but I just wanted to create the opportunity because I remembered the email traffic. All right, so thank you. If there aren't any further questions on that or further questions on the studies and surveys, then the NEAL sub-team will go on to explore those questions and share that with the group on the next call. You know, as we mentioned in the email, there might be some discussion about a separate branch for people that in the registrant survey that say they aren't registrants to see if they're using alternatives. But I think we'll be discussing that on the Nielsen sub-team call. Next on the agenda is the report on the coordination call with the new DTLD Subsequent Procedures PDP Working Group. And for the most part, they were very receptive to the work that we had done to try and identify our most favorite topics. So that was, I think it was a good call. I mean, they're very interested in trying to get a sense of our timeline, which is why these work plans are going to be important. And we need to get one done for this for the orphan sub-team on application and evaluation, which is our next topic, because that's where a lot of the overlap occurs with the subsequent procedures team. And but for the most part, I mean, they've agreed to kind of, you know, give us, you know, time on the issues that we identified as being of greatest importance. And Avri confirmed that again on her update that she gave at the WISIS forum on Monday. So, as Alf notes in the chat, there's a dedicated wiki page for coordination meetings with the PDP chairs so that you can sort of stay up to date on that coordination. It's going to be an ongoing process, And as I said, their biggest pushback to us was getting an understanding of our milestones and timeframes. So we want to try to communicate that as much as possible. There's some areas where we're kind of taking the lead, some areas where they're taking the lead, and then there's some areas where we may want to try and coordinate, which I will bring up in the next topic. But on the whole, the call went well, and they were receptive to our fairly finite list of priority topics that we wanted to make sure that preceded any policy development work. I will also mention that Jordan Aubrey's jealous of our CCT.wiki, so I don't know if you're able to use your connections to help them get a subproc.wiki URL so they don't have to pass around this long URL, but that's she asked me that in Geneva on Monday. any questions about that? We're going to just dive into the substance of that part of our review. Looks like Jordan's typing his response. So anyway, so Jordan, they want subproc.wiki, so I can put you in touch with Aubrey if you want. So the next topic of discussion is the application and evaluation portion of our review, and I call it the orphan portion of our review simply because we've had a lot of things that have come in front of it in terms of data prioritization and coordination with the PDP, et cetera. But we do need to spend a little bit of time today diving into this in substance. And so what I wanted to do was go back through some of the questions that we raised in our initial brainstorming session in Los Angeles and begin the same exercise that we have gone through with the competition choice and the trust and safeguard subteams to identify what the possible data sources might be for answering some of these questions and whether we have them or need to get them, because if we need to get them, we need to get on top of that. One of the most interesting issues, do I have scroll control, or does everybody have scroll control? Yeah, it looks like everybody does. So if you go to the And thank you, Alice, for turning my ugly bulleted list into a beautiful slide. as always, you make us look good. So addressing the needs of the underserved areas and markets was one of the big questions that came up quite a bit in our brainstorming session and presents some unique challenges for this team. I know that it is the intention of the PDP working group to, let's just find the best way to refer to them, the subproc team, to actually do some interviews with applicants. I think the primary purpose of that is to make life easier for applicants generally and to make the process less onerous in a sort of general way, and I think that will have implications for underserved communities in that there's often economic implications there, that the more burdensome the process is, the less sort of generally accessible that it is. But I wanted to kind of put out for conversation how we might get at the notion of whether or not the application process served the developing world, given that it may be people that fell out of the process in the middle or people that didn't engage in the process to begin with, because that might speak to, what kind of marketing went into the program, et cetera. So this isn't a very organized thought. I think there's two parts of this. One is that as they do their surveys, we might want to think about additional questions and be engaged with them in those focus groups, but it could be that there's also another group of people that we want to reach out to that they won't reach out to, and I'm interested in your thoughts on how to even figure out who that is and who we should be talking to. Wada, you asked when the data will be available, and no time soon. I think that we will be trying to do it in conjunction with them. So they're very early in the stages of doing the interviews they're going to do that we might piggyback on, but we should try to figure out what it is that we're going to be trying to do ourselves. So I just wanted to open that up for discussion about whether or not, about how we might begin to determine whether or not the application and evaluation process served typically underserved areas and markets and communities, and how we who we might ask that question to. So please raise your hand and let's just start having a brainstorming session about that. I'm reading through a little bit in the chat. Carlos, do you want to speak up and elaborate on your notion about the CCTLDs?
Yes, thank you very much, Jonathan. This is Carlos for the record. I'm going back to the comment I made to Jordan and before. We have to assume that new GTLDs will take market share from somebody. And in the case of underserved areas, a proxy question that I consider we should test, might be wrong, is if new GTLDs will offer more choice as opposed to the standard offering in those countries, which is the CCTLD. I don't want to bring the whole pie of CCTLDs into the discussion, but I think we can ask a few questions to the CCTLDs if they followed, if they applied for new TLDs. We know some that became resellers of new GTLDs, et cetera, et cetera. So there is some proxy questions we could try to address to the CCTLDs. I don't have a very clear idea, but I assume that in the end, the expanded choice of TLDs will reduce the market share of the CCTLDs, and maybe some of the fine economists in the group will help us define these hypotheses better. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carlos. And I think it's worth getting some of that feedback. As Jamie points out, there may be instances in which they're participating in the new GTLD program. There might be instances in which they've become competitors to a new TLD. And there are, some CCTLDs that are their own hosts and others that use hosts in the developing world to manage their CCTLD. So there's a lot of complexity there in understanding whether or not that market has been sufficiently served, and see. Some of this we can look at backwards, if that makes sense, and look at some of the results that come out of the competition and choice analysis to see whether or not those communities have gotten increased choice and product availability, and then from that sort of assume that the application evaluation process didn't sufficiently serve that market, but it would be very indirect. So we might want to figure out if there's a way to reach out to various communities to figure out about that, how that process worked for them. And I know that the people that it'll be easier to get to the people that applied and dropped out. I know that, for example, letters of credit ended up being a very difficult thing for a lot of applicants, and so they're moving toward potentially having an authorized list of back-end providers so that you didn't have to, that who would then provide the guarantees so that the applicant would not need to. So that's one area that we ought to be able to get that information from ICANN about who dropped out of the process. I don't know if anybody on staff can answer the question about whether or not there were inquiries that didn't result in applications or something like that. And Jamie, this has nothing to do with competition necessarily. I think it was about whether or not the application process served the developing world. Laureen, you have your hand up. And Jamie, maybe you can elaborate your question.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think it's always the problem of how do you get at the group you don't know about. So I think that initial question you raised is really important because I certainly can imagine that there were people in developing countries who thought, oh, the notion of a new GDLD, that sounds like a great business opportunity, and then may have taken a look at all the requirements and said, not for me. And then you, in an, you know, an ideal world, you'd want to say, okay, well, why wasn't it for you? And I'm just wondering what creative ideas we might have to try and get at that segment, because it seems to me if we could, that would be important. And maybe if there are, you know, if there are constituencies within different regions that might have more insights or contacts with, you know, groups with who would have liked to become involved in this process but found it too onerous.
Thanks, Lorraine. I think that is one of the central questions, so I'm looking forward to those creative ideas. Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. It's Jordan Buchanan. I wonder if one way to approach this might be to look at who applied from the developed world and then try to figure out who their analogs would be on the in the developing world, and then go and ask, do a, some sort of survey of the cohort of types of people that applied. So, you know, my impression is that you've got a few sort of big buckets of applicants in the program, and they are sort of incumbent, either registrars or registries, sort of people who I'll call sort of insiders in the ICANN process. Presumably, there's some, you know, a lot of those entities are in the developed world, but presumably, you know, there's some number of those entities also in the developing world. So we could go and do a survey of, you know, registrars and maybe CCTLD operators to get to the point that's already been raised. Ask them, you know, did you consider applying for the program? Why not? Do a similar survey for people that didn't apply from the developed world, just as, and maybe including applicants as well, but just sort of get some cross-sectional data. And then the other big bucket, other than sort of industry insiders, are sort of like large corporations applying for dot brands or generic names. So there's some, you know, there's some companies like L'Oreal or Johnson & Johnson that applied for generic terms related to their business. So maybe then you do a survey across some of the bigger companies in the developing world and, that would represent the same sorts of applicants that existed in the developed world and say, why didn't you apply? That might be one approach to get at it.
Thanks, Jordan. That's a very interesting suggestion. I'll have to figure out how to figure out what those analogs are and try and identify them as part of our work to see if we can identify a list. I mean, I think registrars is a good place to start, and that was certainly a good and registrars apparently love participating in studies, so we can look forward to that process, but maybe a survey will be a little bit more productive than a data request. Carlton, you had some input.
Yes, this is Carlton. I wanted to follow up because I hear we saw that we have a few companies we thought sizable enough and might be interested.
Carlton, I feel like you're breaking up a little bit. Are you talking directly into the microphone?
I have a headphone on, so I'm not sure. Can you hear me better now? Are you hearing me better?
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking at you. So we started and said this program, the good word that in the gut of the main name. And so we said, you know, coming up to get the first, when we showed them that can this type application and what that was the first pushback. And this when
hey Carlton, unfortunately you're fading in and out. I think everyone's having difficulty hearing you. Can we, are you on phone or via microphone?
I am on.
Is it worth it?
Dialed into the U.S. Skype.
Oh, via Skype?
Via Skype.
Yeah, we're, Do you want to try your microphone directly instead of the dial-in via Skype, or should we try to do a call-out to you? Because right now I think we're having difficulty hearing you, and we're all very interested in what you have to say.
Can I ask? I'll ask Sam to call.
All right, that sounds like a good idea. So, staff, if you could try to do a call-out, Carlton, that'll be helpful. Thank you. Jordan, is that an old, that's an old hand, right? Okay. Any other thoughts on this? I see Carlos has been starting this list. Can we form a little sub-team to look at what those analogs might be in those three groups, the multinationals, et cetera. And then I guess staff, can we look at, I guess we have to figure out how we're trying to define the developing world too, but can we look at a getting a list of registrars that fit that description, and then think about engaging someone, maybe it's Nielsen, but maybe it's somebody else, to ask them some questions. We may need to do less statistically significant survey and just do some focus groups with them as well. I don't know, but... So can we get a subgroup going to identify, based on Jordan's framework, who the potential applicants might have been in the developing world? So, Wado, that's the subgroup. is using the three categories that Jordan laid out, do some analysis of who we might be trying to talk to in a categorical way about what the about why they didn't apply. And then staff, if you can get us a list of people that fell out of the application process, Let's look at what that list looks like as well, and see where they fell out, and see, you know, where they're from, and see if that can be a group of people to reach out to as well. And again, I don't know if who we should talk to about this, but if somebody from the new GTLD team, is it possible to determine if there were people that made inquiries and but then decided not to apply. Jordan, can you just put into the chat the three categories that you laid out for the sub-team?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. I also think we may just want to step back and take a look at the categories of we just look at who applied for the
right.
successfully applied from the developed world. But I can put what my guesses are as a first pass.
That's right. Good point, Jordan. We need to help look at what some of those who the applicants were that did successfully apply and to develop those categories as well. All right, Karen says there's probably not a single source. So, Karen, I mean, let's just brainstorm about how we might get whatever we can from a list like that. This is a greenfield experience of trying to prove a negative here a little bit. As Calvin suggested, we should also look at applicants from the developing world and understand their experience and see where it was onerous. Again, I think some of that will be captured by the PDP. But let's try to look at the subset of applicants that we can identify as being from the developing world and make sure that we reach out to them directly. Aliza, I see you have your hand open. Up.
Thank you. I was just, I think I captured it now. So as Karen noted, we can look into what we have on those who maybe fell out of the application process. You had also noted registrars. Did you mean registrars as potential applicants, or was that in relation to something else?
No, registrars as potential applicants.
Okay.
That's one of the categories of applicants that from the developing world that did apply, the two cows and others.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Jonathan, just David here, just coming in on that. When you said two cows, because they're Canadian, aren't they? Does that count as developing world these days? I'm just being jesting.
I think it's part of the United States.
Oh, you guys. Gonna get us in trouble. This is a public call. I think they're shortly going to have an American refugee problem in Canada given what's going on in our presidential politics, but that's another issue. So hopefully they're building some camps or something like that for us as we all try to migrate there. Any other suggestions about identifying those communities? I mean, those are some good places to start. So let's try to move that forward. Hopefully you guys have captured, from the chat some people that have agreed to be on that, sub-team to help identify some of those, analogs or cohorts. I'm happy to be on that group as well. That's brainstorming on that issue. So then, beyond that sort of interview area, the straight up participation, we were going to look for providing. Dispute resolutions, we were going to look at some of the dispute resolutions that were going on that looked like they involved folks from developing world. Again, I think if we look at people that fell out of the process to some extent, we'll begin to see where the system didn't work. But we may find areas where it did and don't want to assume that it always didn't work. I think we're going in with that assumption, and we should be careful about that. So let's look at dispute resolutions as well and the dispute resolution process and see where it involved parties from the developing world and see what those outcomes were and see if there's some way to get some information out of folks there too. So again, I think that's probably in a way another way of getting at people that we ought to be talking to about this. The other issue was the application support. I think this has a similar problem in that the number of applicants for support was very small. And I don't know, Karen, if you have some sense of similarly whether or not there were people that fell out from that process, or it seemed more like people just didn't come to the process at all in the first place. And maybe what we should also do is invite a couple members of that the JAC or whatever it was called, the Joint Applicant Support team, to talk to us a little bit about what they were trying to do and get their ideas about why they think it wasn't more used. And so WADA believes that it has to do with outreach, and I think that's possible. And so we should also be looking at what kind of outreach happened. I guess that's another thing that might be worthy of some presentation. Again, is that Karen? Is it possible for us to hear from the folks inside ICANN that were responsible for outreach and try to figure out what outreach took place, what was budgeted for it, and again, share reactions about what seemed to work and not work so we can get a sense of the outreach that took place? Karen, go ahead. You have your hand up.
Can I, this is Carlton. I'm calling from my mobile and I got in, so I'm not sure what happened directly.
Your voice sounds great now.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what I was talking about.
Okay.
Loreen said that, she gave a simple kind of explanation. Gee, this is things happening. Would you be interested? And what do you have to do? And then you look for the feedback. And that's exactly how we approached it here. In several jurisdictions, I know for Trinidad and Jamaica and Barbados, we had meetings, events where we talk about this new GTLD program. And one of the things that we thought, we were promoting the idea of getting businesses more involved in the domain name system by getting them at the floor level, in the marketplace. And we targeted a couple of the big companies, in our space, multinationals, and the media companies. And we said, look, we had conversations with them, and we said, this is what's happening, and you can get all the information from here, and so on and so on. The first pushback was they thought if they get in, they have to look at their market. So they start looking at the regional market and what they could do to attract customers from the region. So they start thinking what kind of community type applications or geographical type applications that would make that possible, that would they think would be attractive to regional consumers. And the first thing that we got back from them was that they had a different sense of what a community type TLD was from what was explained in all of the requirements. And they had a difficulty with navigating the geographic type ones because of the various bumps in the road. So that was the first two issues. And then the big one was when we said, well, how do you join? How do you get on board? The next big one was the price to enter. And the media companies, I can tell you the Gleaner, for example, that has a lot of and has been trying to build its business online, they were put off by the costs to enter. And so we started talking about the applicant support. Of course, the restrictions and that were such that they would not qualify. So those barriers were real for them. The difference between their concept of what a community type TLD would be and the geographic TLDs that they thought would be of interest to the region, how they would have to navigate was a big problem. They thought it was onerous. And then beyond that, no, the price to enter the game was what was a big turnoff. And I know that for a fact for the three, we targeted three major companies in the region, and that was what the response was. To start, I'll let you know that.
Kalta, thank you very much. I guess, is it possible for us to engage with those folks again as a team and delve into some of these questions with them? So, you know, with the acknowledgement that we're trying to improve the program and make it more understandable and easier to approach, do you think you'll be able to reach back out to the companies that you reached out to before and get them to interact with our team?
I know that we could probably get to the Gleaner. The other people in the other companies, they have long left. And the approach was the online people who had a sense of what the internet was and so on. And the business, the people who were in charge of those properties were the ones we went to first. And they came back to us and said, listen, this was the response from inside. So I know we can talk to the Gleaner, but that's only one of the three. And we didn't do a major thing. We just thought if we could get one company from the region involved, that would have been a big success. So I think we can speak to people at the Gleaner. I think one person is still there. But the others have long left.
And if you're on the sub-team, you know, hopefully you can identify some additional people that we can try to reach out to, or companies that we can try to reach out to that you didn't reach out to, and try to get some of these questions answered. Because, I mean, some of it may boil down to, you know, where that bar is, that it's too expensive or too complicated. I don't know what you were mentioning with geographics. Is that issues with governments and the concerns of the GACs surrounding geographic names? Was that one of the things that they bumped into?
That was our sense of it. Because remember, when you talk to them about getting into business, the first thing they talk about was, well, who are we going to serve? And so they start looking at the regional market. They say, you know, we have 15 million people we could probably extract. And so they make those calculations. And they start thinking, what kind of strings would attract them into this? And the first thinking is that community type, you know, serve a community and the wider community, the geographic region. So they start thinking about that. Caribbean was the one came up, for example. And I know we even went as far as to the regional body, CARICOM, to see if they would be interested in putting up something. Jennifer's CARICOM, the regional quasi-political organization, they were also apprised, and that was a big thing. What was geographic to the business people, you had to go through too many hoops, they thought, and that was the end of it.
Right. Well, I would love to, and I see some discussion in the chat. David's list, I think, is a good set of hypotheses. Again, what we want to do is get to something a little bit more specific. I mean, a part of how we're trying to do things differently is make this evidence-based, and we could theorize about what it is that kept the developing world out, and we could, try to make recommendations based on those theories. And I think what we want to do is try to find ways to measure their participation and get some actual feedback from folks on the on why or why not they participate in the program, and then make recommendations that are really based on that feedback and hopefully a future team can use to look at the data again to see if it's changed. So I think this is going to be a harder one than competition that's more sort of economically driven, et cetera. But let's look at trying to figure out how we can get some evidence, at least in the form of some direct feedback from actual applicants that fell out. And then as the sub-team forms to find these kind of cohorts in the developing world, you know, people that didn't even bother to apply. So, Carlton, looking for your help in reaching back out to some of these communities to get the answer to some of these questions. Stan, go ahead.
Yeah, Carlton's statement made me think about an issue we haven't really discussed very much, and that is the role of backends. One of the ways for small or new entrants to overcome entry barriers is to contract out some of the activities. And so I have just some numbers here that I got out of my favorite data source. It listed 978 new GTLDs, but for them, 40 back-end providers, which suggests that back-ends are, in fact, supporting multiples of registries. And if we want to think about competition and entry barriers, I think we have to also spend some time thinking about the role of back-ends.
Stan, I think you're exactly right, and I think it's our intention to do so from a number of different perspectives. I think one is whether or not the one of the things that ICANN staff have brought up and that the PDP team have brought up is the fact that the application process and part of the expense associated with it is that with each individual applicant, there was a separate review process of their back-end provider, even though that provider had already been evaluated as part of another application. So there were some serious inefficiencies associated with the application process because of that very statistics that you're pointing to, which was a common set of back-end providers that could be evaluated once and then become a kind of a check mark for the application. The other piece was shifting some of the guarantees and the letters of credit, et cetera, that were expected from applicants onto the back-end providers as well, because that became another application, you know, barrier to entry that stems, again, from the same issue that you mentioned. So there's that issue that's already in open discussion and may already be addressed because folks are switching between their host providers already, and that's causing a reevaluation process. So ICANN may already make that reform. So then the other question then that comes up. Oh, go ahead, Stan. Go ahead.
No, if I could just put this in sort of narrow economic terms, if you can use a back-end provider, economies of scale are less important. It may be possible to, in fact, operate a registry with many fewer registrants than would be the case if you had to provide those services yourself.
Yeah, for sure. For sure that's the case. And so one of the questions I'd like to ask is whether or not the back-end providers themselves were sufficiently accessible and whether the pricing was there in such a way that it made that economy of scale translated down to the applicant or not. And then the final question. Yeah, go ahead.
One more piece of data. The top six backends account for over 90% of all the registrants for the new GTLDs.
Registrants or applicants?
They call them domains, but it's entities that register. Okay, of those. The top six backends account for over 90% of all the registries of the registrants in domains, the final registrants. It's very concentrated.
Right. Sorry. And I the only thing I was trying to clarify, Stan, is registrants are people that get second level domains, and applicants are the people that get top level domains.
Call them applicants. They actually call them domains in their data, but yes, applicants.
Okay. It is heavily concentrated. As Jordan points out in the chat, the last point that I was going to make is whether or not there's enough and if there's sufficient distribution of these back-end host providers. In other words, is it does there need to be some way to promote more hosts that themselves live in the developing world, or is that a red herring? So we have to figure out, try and find a way to get at that notion as well. Like, does the host need to be local for an applicant to feel comfortable working with them? Karen, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is circling back to the kind of prior discussion about outreach and what the staff could provide. I just didn't want to let that drop. And I think most of the, ways that we piece this together are what the team members have been saying. I think we already have an action item to provide some background on the outreach per regions and the, resources that were applied to that. I think primarily in terms of communications staff who would have been involved in that, I'm not sure any of them are still here. However, what might help is, we did have the staff members in the regions, in the various regions, active in promoting the program and the availability of different aspects of it. And I think a lot of that knowledge is still here in-house. So that's one source. And as Carlton noted, or as Carlton is kind of an example of, there were a lot of, kind of ambassadors out in the community doing outreach and, sort of spreading the word through their connections. So I think that's a key, piece of input. You mentioned the applicant support working group. There was a panel. SARP was the acronym. I can't remember what it stands for, but the panel that actually did the review of the qualifications for applicant support. As well as the statistics that we have. So I think with all of that, we can kind of gather together some background that will provide some perspective on that. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. That'll be very helpful. So hopefully we can get some of those people on the phone or in the room with us at a face-to-face and have some conversations, because I think that'll help spur additional data collection that we want to do. It's clear that we're going to want to do either a formal or informal survey, and so a lot of our work is going to just be identifying people that we want to try to talk to. So let's see what we can get done there as far as a list. And Carlton, thanks for your help. We're going to be leaning on you quite a bit in this area, so talk to you soon. David, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I was just going to come back on the point of the registry operators and their location, and two things on that. Certainly first, that in our experience, and we filed quite a few applications and prepared them and did quite a few reviews of the various registry operators for specific clients who wanted to decide who should they use. So we spent a lot of time on that. And in the end, we might have come out with recommendations saying A might be technically better than B for a variety of reasons, but the anecdotal result was that the clients would tend to go with the registry back-end provider that was in the same country or area as them. And certainly if I looked at the applications we did, that's what we found, which just leads me to the second point of something. It might be something we can research, because if we look at where each registry backend provider is based, and we compare that to all of the applicants, and we've got all that data, and because ICANN's got all that data of which registry backend provider was used and the location of the applicant, we might have some useful statistics there which we could just use quite easily and quite quickly to take that forward.
Thanks, David. That's probably worth looking at. Aliza, maybe you can help us with getting that data. Obviously, with the high level of concentration that Stan mentioned, the options were limited, but we might still get some interesting information about the choices people made from among those choices, and see if there was some proclivity toward proximity. And if so, that may be an issue that we need to try and look at. If there just simply wasn't a host that was proximate. I know that some ccTLDs have offered to operate as backend host providers, but there's plenty of ccTLDs that use hosts that are located in the global north. So it's not a straightforward question.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to follow, I mean, we've obviously got several in the US, but there's, you know, Ireland nominates in the UK. You've got France. You've got Europe. You've got ARI in Australia. So we've got quite a good spread, nevertheless. So I think that's where it might be quite interesting to see. I mean, where did any Australian applicant use anybody else other than Oz Registry International, for instance? I think that's little things like that. We're going to get some useful data.
All right. So Lisa, I'm dumping that on your plate to see if we can get access to that information. Okay. I guess given the time, we should stop the discussion there. But you can see from this slide that we have more discussions to have about this. So we're going to be having ongoing portions of our plenary that are devoted to the application evaluation subteam. It might end up being like first hour, second hour, or something like that at each call. Let's keep this going. Maybe staff, we need to organize now that we have a little bit of a subteam for identifying people with whom we should speak. It might be worth trying to put together a call of that subteam, and so that we can get a little work plan in order there. On the next item on the agenda is data from Center. I'll just mention that I turned that into a letter to Peter and sent it to him. I have not yet heard back, but I only sent that a couple of days ago. So hopefully we'll hear back from Peter shortly on the questions that Dehan and his group prepared for Center. Under any other business, I wanted to mention that we've sort of run afoul of ICANN IT with respect to Slack. It's difficult to make Slack fit exactly in the way that we've always thought about how these discussions are open to the public and how those archives are shared and how people have observer access versus write-only access. And the IT team was concerned that that it was too much of a hack and that they don't have the bandwidth to do additional research to accommodate our request to use Slack. So unfortunately, we're not going to be able to use Slack for our discussions. We're going to need to find ways to be as efficient as possible in using email. There's already been some complaints about reply alls with kind of frivolous messages, so the extent to which you can take conversations private that the entire group doesn't need to share or use the sub-team email alias. If it's really a question for the sub-team, please do so, just because people's inboxes are going to get very full very quickly. So let's try to be as respectful as we can about how many emails we're sending to everyone. And meanwhile, I will compile a list of tools, a couple of tools that might be of use to folks to help organize their emails as they come in into categories and things like that. So I'm sorry I got everybody excited about Slack, but ICANN IT doesn't have the bandwidth to accommodate us at this time. David, I assume that's an old hand. Lorene, you have your hand up?
Yeah, this is just real quick regarding email. Since we're not going to be able to use Slack, I just wanted to ask folks if they can be very clear in their headings about what the topic is about, because if our if our heading is going to be one of the primary way we organize things, I think it's then up to us to be making sure that our headings are informative and clear. And then second, if folks don't already know, it's Happy Star Wars Day, and may the Force be with you.
Yes, thank you, Laureen. May the Force be with you as well. Thanks, everyone, for participating in the call. I don't know if anybody has any additional as I said, I'll try to circulate an email about email protocol and things like that and tools, and we'll make do. I'm very disappointed about Slack, but it is what it is. Anybody have any other business? Okay, great. Thanks, everyone, for participating on the call. I'm looking forward to everybody coming to D.C., and particularly my neighborhood. So, Pam, I know I owe you some restaurant recommendations, and I'll get those to you shortly. And if folks are coming in the night before, let's try to get you over to Adams Morgan, or even over to my patio if you guys are interested. Thanks, everyone. Good work, and let's keep at it.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Goodbye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.